guest artist in the studio, Claire Wise. Welcome back, Claire.
Thank you very much. Good morning, Mary. Very pleased to be back here.
It's a delight. Delight's mine. Claire was with us sometime last year about International Women's Day, but I'm telling you, it's a completely different page today. Claire has written this amazing book called Unraveling the Yarn, and I love the title. But start us off, how did that come about? Tell us.
Well, it started with an interest in exploring the history of the house that I lived in from 1971 to 81.
And where was the house?
That in Manor Road in Leighton,
oh, right.
Number 9, a big double-fronted house which we shared with another couple. And I thought it would be interesting to explore the history. And I had a book from the Leighton and Leightonstone History Society that told me that there was somebody had been born there who was notable, because they've got this booklet that you can look up, you know, who was born where in Leighton or Leightonstone. And I looked at this name and it said that it was Zoe Lady Hart Dyke had been born there.
God, that's a mouthful.
Yes. And she'd been born there in 1896. So I reckon that she must have been one of the first people in that house, because I knew a bit about how old the houses are in Manor Road, and they're still standing. So I started really exploring just the house history and then wondering about this name of this woman who had been born there. So that's where I started.
And in terms of doing your bit of digging, you didn't think about a book at the beginning, surely, or did you?
Not at all, Mary, no. I thought, well, I might just write a small article for the History Society magazine.
Wow.
And, you know, that would probably be it, because I've written other articles for them before, and it would have been of local interest.
Wow. But it's fascinating, dear listeners. We've been chatting off air about the silk farmer, which a term I've never heard of. So tell us a bit more about that.
Well, Zoe Lady Hart Dyke was, as a child, she was very interested in keeping silkworms. Now, silkworms are actually the larvae, the caterpillars of the silk moth. It was a hobby, in fact, it still is in some places, for children to keep silkworms and watch them develop into growing the cocoons that they then break out of and become moths. So it's a natural process. And Zoe was doing this as a child. And in the garden at 9 Manor Road, when we lived there in the 70s, there was a mulberry tree. And that we knew that was a very old mulberry tree. They are very old, the mulberries. So I knew that mulberry tree would have been there when Zoe was living in the house. So I really wanted to set out to establish that she must have started her interest in silkworms when she was at Manor Road in Leighton. I didn't conclusively establish it, because in her autobiography, which I got quite a bit of information from, you know, she didn't even mention Leighton, to her shame.
No, absolutely. So, coming back to the actual writing of the book, you said you started with the idea of doing just an article for the historical, or as I call it, the Hysterical Society, listeners. But then it actually spawned into a book. So, I mean, how did that, was it because you found so much, how did that all come about?
Well, I had an awful lot of material available to me, much more than I thought would ever have been available, in the shape of Zoe having written her own autobiography. That was back in 1949. Her grandson having, who's Tom Hart Dyke, having written a biography of his own with two chapters devoted to her. So I realised that I'd stumbled upon a character who, you know, was worthy of attention, and not just the link with the silk farm, but perhaps looking at her whole life. And it just became, in a way, a compulsive activity. Yeah, an obsession to keep digging and to keep looking. And in the way that you can do family history, you know, you can look up publicly.
The internet has opened up the world.
Yes,
yeah, definitely.
You know, publicly available records about when people were born, when they got married, when they died. So I could find out an awful lot about her just from public records, as well as her own writings.
Right, so you say she was notable. So what struck you about her, say, apart from the the silk farming business, which is fascinating, isn't it? But what else struck you as you dug deeper about the woman?
Well, she was a bombastic character, definitely. She displeased her father very early on, because she wasn't very good at school and she was very disobedient. She got into a lot of scrapes climbing out of the window of a dormitory when she was at a college in France.
Of course, we'd call that spirited women now.
Yes, she was, definitely that. And she...
Why was she in France?
She went... her father sent her to a finishing school kind of thing because she didn't manage to pass exams at the school in Hammersmith where she
so
was.
So that was obviously very important for him. Yes. So what was his role?
He was a doctor. And so this house in Manor Road, Leighton, its first occupants were Dr. and Mrs. Bond. That was the family name. They were from Norfolk. And it was a doctor's surgery as well as the family house. And Zoe was born into that in 1896, and she had two elder sisters and an elder brother. That was the family. Sadly, there was a younger sibling who died, Dr. Bond, he was the doctor for the area, and that must have been a tragedy for them, I think, to have that happen in the family.
And of course, if she was the youngest then, she obviously got more license, and it was like the tearaway. So you've just been talking just gently about Zoe, and what's her full name again, Zoe?
She's Zoe Lady Hart Dyke.
God, what a mouthful. No wonder I can't get it right. But so she was like a tearaway. She was a failure at the finishing school. So presumably she came back to Leighton. So what is the next episode of this infamous woman?
Well, she had to come back in 1914 because of the outbreak of the First World War. So that finishing school in Saumur in France, it was closed down. So that 1914, she came back to London, but by then her parents were in Hammersmith. That's where they'd moved to from via Paul in Dorset as well. They'd been there in the meantime, so they moved around a bit. Anyway, so she came back to Hammersmith in West London, and she was lucky in a way because her very outgoing character and her confidence in herself enabled her to move away from her family home in her teenage years.
Wow.
Go and get a flat rented with friends and to try and get a job. Now, her father ridiculed her because she didn't pass the entrance exam for the first job she went for at Barclays Bank.
So in what way would he ridicule her?
Well, he actually said that never had a man been cursed with such an imbecile for a daughter.
Oh, whoa, gosh, that's punishing,
because
isn't it?
She failed the entrance exam for getting a job in a bank. Now, he had high hopes for her that really she might have been going to university or something like that, which would be very high hopes in those days. But he was of a class where he could have enabled that.
Yes.
And clearly she was very bright, but she was not applying in the academic way that enabled her to get through exams.
So she wasn't very strong on discipline, I suppose.
And maybe that was it,
saying.
Yeah.
So when she was in the flat sharing, what job did she get then? Did she take the silkworms with her, or do you know?
Oh, yeah, she had those with her all
really?
The time. Wow. She smuggled them to France, and yes, she always had them, always had boxes of silkworm eggs. She was always getting them to mature and getting the cocoons. That it was an obsession of hers. But it, to answer your question, she eventually found a job in an insurance company in the city. So she was travelling every day from West London. I think she moved a bit nearer. She went to Earl's Court, and she was a commuter into the city. And she had a fantastic time. She tells a story about when the First World War ended, and there were celebrations in the city. And she was among the crowds. She came out of her office with all the other clerks. You can imagine it in the streets around, narrow streets around the city of London. And this brewer's dray horse came along with a cart. and she jumped on top of it, and the horse was so startled, it ran off down Cornhill, and she was still on top of it. So that's the kind of tearaway that she was. But it led her to, then meet, when she met an eligible man, to immediately get married and have a whirlwind romance. And I think really they had a wonderful time in the early 1920s in West London.
So when she married Claire, she would have had to packed up her job, or was it different in those classes?
I think it was different then. But there was an event that happened fairly soon after they were married. And the point is, who was it that she married? She married somebody called Oliver Augustus Hamilton Hart Dyke. And he was the son of a baronet. But he was the second son, so he wasn't likely to inherit the estate, which is down in Kent. So he didn't really think he was going to inherit anything. So he and Zoe had a wonderful time, and he was an engineer, and she was, a clerk, and they enjoyed themselves in the kind of cosmopolitan bohemian world.
Yes.
Of the 20s, the start of the roaring 20s, when everything changed.
Can.
Yeah.
Did she have a family then, or?
Well, it did. Yes, she did. In time, but that came after this event that I just referred to, which was her husband's brother, Percival Hart Dyke, sadly died unexpectedly early, and he had no children. So Oliver Augustus,
was he the eldest?
Yes. So the second son, Zoe's husband, suddenly found that he would be the heir to the farm. The father's still alive, Sir William Hart Dyke was still alive, but it was a question of there being a proper heir, because the father was by then 87.
Wow.
Zoe had to then toe the line, I think. They were given a big house in Leatherhead in Surrey to live in, they got on with having three children of their own. But she set up her first silk farm in the attic. The house in Leatherhead, yes.
So it never left her.
No.
So did she actually get involved in producing silk, or was that not her interest?
Not the finished fabric.
Right.
What she produced was raw silk. So that's the skeins of see skeins of wool.
Yeah.
That's the extent to which she got involved in it. Because after that, the raw silk would then go to the silk dyers and weavers and spinners, and their specialist industrial factories, which used to be in Hertfordshire and Essex and so on. And she developed business relationships with them for sending.
So, because she kind of grew up then. So she had three children.
Yes.
And what other things did she do of note in terms of, did she live a long life?
Well, she became extremely interested in and talented in creative pursuits, and she became a socialite as well. So in the 30s, she started rubbing shoulders with all kinds of interesting women, and she only ever mentions in her book the women that she associated with. So she was clearly a feminist of the time, which makes her very interesting, really. So one of the prime women that she met and was a long-term friend of was Mrs. Henderson, who some of the listeners may remember the film Mrs. Henderson Presents.
Yeah? Yes, yes.
Now, Mrs. Henderson was another character of the time.
Is that your second book, love?
No. I think she's been done, because there's a film Mrs. Henderson Presents,
yes, right,
and a musical. Mrs. Henderson owned the Windmill Theatre and was the person who worked out how to stage female nudity within the law. So she developed a big friendship with Zoe. They were of the same mind that they wanted to do creative and unusual pursuits, and they were always dodging authority. But also the big thing was that Mrs. Henderson had a mulberry tree, so she used to give the leaves to Zoe.
Oh, right, so the worms just thread through the whole thing. Yeah. Thread, play on words, Ella. We will give you the details of how to get hold of a copy, but I just want to widen the brief with Claire, because she's more than a publisher and book writer. So you obviously are a book person, and it's your first big love. So how else do you fill your time, shall we say?
Well, yes, I am retired, but I do work 2 days a week regularly at two different charity libraries. One is in Brixton, and it's the library of the Society for Cooperation in Russian and Soviet Studies.
Oh, do we need that now or what?
Because I do happen to be able to speak and read and write Russian language.
Yes, I remember that. Yeah.
So I work in their library, putting the titles of books onto a computer catalogue, and that is fascinating work, because it exercises my brain, and I think it's important to keep brain exercise. And then there's some very interesting people that I work with there. On the other day of the week, I'm at the Marx Memorial Library in Clerkenwell, which is another absolutely fantastic place. It's an 18th century building in Clerkenwell Green. And what I do there is I help with their second-hand book sales. So people send donations in of books that they no longer want, and we put them on book sales. But first of all, they've got to be checked against catalogue. They've got to be classified as to whether we want to keep them or not. And then we've got to price them, and then we've got to get the book sale ready. So, and then we have the book sale on 3 or 4 Saturdays a year. Wow. So that's really quite a busy physical job, as well as keeping the brain active
as well. So you're very meticulous, obviously, with your the work that you're interested in, and that's how that book came together. But how do those little libraries get funded? Are they privately funded, or...?
They're entirely charity funded.
Wow.
I think sometimes there's a possibility of getting some money from Heritage Lottery
legacies,
funding for specific projects. But basically, there's no local government funding or anything like that for those libraries. No.
God,
and mainly it's volunteers that keep the libraries going.
Yeah. So in terms, I mean, apart from all that, and just finishing this book with a big sigh of relief, you've got to get out there and start selling it. But what do you do for just relaxation? What sort of books do you read, or what do you do?
Oh,
stay
for relaxation. Well, I've got many interests, but I'll probably go and sit at my desk and think about another book to write.
Yeah,
I suppose.
Yeah. Active woman indeed, this Claire Wise. So, as we round up now, Claire, let the listeners know how they can get hold of a copy of the book.
Yes. The book is on sale on eBay, and you can search on eBay just with the title of the book. It's called Unravelling the Yarn. The book is also on sale at the Leighton and Leightonstone Historical Society, and their website is www.leightonhistorysociety.org.uk.
Fabulous. And do you think with the local libraries in Walden Forest, will you be donating a copy there?
Yes.
So people could sort of get a taster of that. So that'd be... Well, it's really been wonderful seeing you again, Claire, and I think you've done a magnificent job in putting this book together, and I can't wait to get my head into it.